Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Depending on which scale of the spectrum you're on, some South Africans have had it easier than others, but all of us at some point have felt a significant level of pressure. This leads us to the Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index. And they publish some details that highlight key concerns that we should be mindful of when it comes to the financial pressures confronting South African households and how essentially we've been managing them, especially post-pandemic. We join on the line by Dr. Roelof Botha, economist and compiler of the Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index. Dr. Botha, welcome to the show and thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I do recall that we have touched and discussed on this particular index, the Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index, AFRESHI, if we can refer to it as such. And over the last few quarters, you've gone to review the numbers, unpack the data, and give us some perspective around our financial standing. But maybe before we get into the numbers and the metrics, just a gentle reminder, if you can, please, as to how this data is formulated and put together, and what the measure does tell us about the financial strain South Africans face.
Yes, certainly. The Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index is comprised of 20 different indicators. It is a typical composite index where these indicators are weighted according to their perceived importance for the sector that Altron FinTech finds itself in. And that is earmarked for providing credit facilities to lower income groups. Uh-huh. And the most important ones, obviously, are in the ones that carry the most weight would be employment and salaries and wages, because that provides the overwhelming majority of South Africans with the means of subsistence.
Got you. And this is important, right? Because it does take into consideration what we see, you know, how much South Africans are earning, where interest rates are, inflationary pressures come in, and it really then helps us fully understand, you know, what we're spending on, how much we can spend, and where we're actually allocating that capital. Help us understand, you know, how this comes through in the results there for the latest first quarter of 2025.
Yes, essentially what the index is all about is to tell us whether households have more money to spend.
Yes.
Whether their financial resilience is improving or whether it is contracting. And it has been a tough period over the last couple of 3 years because of the high interest rates. Mm. The index took a tremendous knock when the Monetary Policy Committee of the South African Reserve Bank took interest rates to a 15-year high, despite the absence of demand inflation. It was never necessary to raise interest rates in South Africa to those levels. And it hurt consumers big time. But worst of all, it prevented the economy from creating jobs at pace. And we're paying a huge price for that. Now, things have changed. There is an improvement. The year-on-year growth in the index is 2.5%, which is substantially more than the GDP growth rate. So there is an improvement, but we are still concerned about the future.
Let's talk about that future. And as you mentioned, you touched on interest rates a moment ago. And Dr. Botha, this is where I get excited, because we can't ignore the fact that just earlier this week, the SARB, South African Reserve Bank, and National Treasury appear to have reached alignment in terms of looking to reduce the inflation target, which could have a consequence on the reduction of interest rates. Given where we are with the cycle, the trend we're seeing, and now this agreement to actually review the inflation target, could this have a positive impact on our health, financial health and well-being as South African households?
No.
Really?
That's the short answer.
Tell us why.
If they reduce the inflation target, we are going to be in serious trouble. It is the most ridiculous idea that I've ever heard in my life. Well, second, the first most ridiculous thing that happened at the Monetary Policy Committee was raising interest rates to a 15-year high in the absence of any demand inflation. South Africa is located at the southern tip of the African continent. If you look at a map of the world, you will realize that for us to get our products to the lucrative consumer markets in Southeast Asia, Western Europe, and North America costs a hell of a lot of money. And to get intermediary inputs into our country costs a lot of money. The average price of a product that you can buy in a shop, 50% of that is transport costs.
Yeah.
And 80% of the world's tradable goods get shipped by the ocean. So when sea freight charges increased by 700% shortly after COVID, we had higher inflation as the rest of the world.
Yes.
It was never necessary to raise interest rates because interest rates cannot convince countries to open their harbors again when there is a pandemic, which only happens more or less once in a century or even longer. So it was just foolish monetary policy, quite frankly. Now, for us, we need a flexible inflation target range, because when this happens, then your inflation rate is going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
But then it prevents the Reserve Bank or the Monetary Policy Committee from raising rates unnecessarily, which only damages the economy more. And I just want to, this is so important for the listeners.
Yes.
The previous governor of the Reserve Bank, John Marcus, the only woman ever to hold that position and the best governor we ever had, during her 5-year term of office, the average real prime rate, now this is not technical stuff, it is simply the prime rate, which is the benchmark for your mortgage loan. Some people pay a little bit less, a little bit more than prime, but the prime rate is 10.5% today in South Africa.
Yes.
That's, you can phone the bank, they're 10.5%. Our inflation rate is 3%. So the real interest rate, prime minus the CPI, is 10 minus 3, gives you 7.5. This is the current scenario. When John Marcus was governor, that figure was 3.4%. And as Johan Genetli, the MD of Altron FinTech, has pointed out, that is 118% higher. The cost of credit and the cost of capital in South Africa is 118% higher than it was between 2011 and 2015.
Gotcha.
Why was there such a dramatic shift in monetary policy from one governor to the next? I can tell you why. Because the new Monetary Policy Committee do not understand the priorities of the African economy. Our problem is not inflation. Our problem is unemployment. We need to create jobs.
I've got you on that, Dr. Du Poorter. And you're mentioning so many valid points that I do want us to just expand on, just to, you know, to hear more from your views and mm-hmm. even, you know, play devil's advocate in this regard. Coming back to the theme that you did mention regarding, again, supply and inflation really being, inflation being driven by the supply side and that not being open to our influence and reducing the target won't help. Many again would come forward to argue that for the MPC, they typically argue that they can't, their mandate doesn't focus on job creation. And is that where the concern then is? Do we need to relook the focus, the policy framework, or are there ways within which inflation targeting does have a ripple effect into the opportunities to create jobs in South Africa?
The Reserve Bank's mission statement or policy states specifically that whatever it does, it has to look at growth. Sustained growth, and by definition, by implication, employment creation. This has been pointed out
inflation
by Brian Cantor from the University of Cape Town, by Graham Barr, and by several economists in South Africa. There is a dual mandate. The one is price stability. The other one is sustained economic growth. They have, ever since 2015, when John Marcus retired, they took their eye off the growth issue and they focused only on inflation, and that has hurt this economy tremendously. We now have the highest unemployment rate, defined by the percentage of people that cannot find a job, divided by those that, by the total labor force. We now have an unemployment rate, if you define that from the formal sector employment perspective, of 50%. There are exactly as many people in South Africa with formal jobs, like the one you have, than the number of people that cannot find a job. This is very dangerous from a socio-political perspective. It provides fuel for radical political parties that want to tear up this country's constitution. This is a very serious matter, and that's why I'm hot under the collar about this, because by a stroke of a pen, they can reduce the prime rate tomorrow. They can allow people to buy houses, to be able to afford houses again. They can lower the cost of capital. Businesses can expand. And they can get rid of the overregulation of the South African economy and make it easier for people to start businesses. Then we can fly.
In your assessment, Dr. Poorter, what should the prime interest rate be, given the influence and the concerns that you've raised?
Well, let's go back to John Marcus, who was, as far as I'm concerned, and many people will agree with me, that the most successful governor during her 5 years, the real prime rate was 3.4%. The economy grew at 2.6% in real terms. But and now it's not growing at all, right? So she had 3.4% real prime, which was obviously she targeted it effectively, real prime. Now let's raise that slightly to 4%, right? Mm-hmm. Just to be on the conservative side. And then we have to add the current inflation rate of 3. That gives you 7. South Africa's prime rate should be 7%. And you know what? It was 7%. It was 7% at the end of 2020.
Yes,
why they took that
was lower. I get you.
Why they raised that to the highest level in 15 years is absolutely beyond me. The prime rate in South Africa should be 7%. If that happens, this economy will grow at between 3 and 4% within the next year.
Dr. Botha, to come in there as to where the interest rates are so shot up, and I'm sure you know this in your data, given that you have the analysis, is of course the influence we saw of the supply chain environment, right, post the Russia-Ukraine invasion as well that took place there. So are you essentially saying that these rates might have been substantiated in being increased because of the supply inflation coming into the market, but that we didn't see interest rates being cut as quickly and as efficiently as what they should have been?
It wasn't necessary to raise interest rates at all. A worse, you know, a middle ground could have been that they took the interest rate, that they would have raised the interest. They took it down from 10 to 7% because of COVID. And one understands that, and that was very welcome. That allowed the South African economy to recover so quickly from the COVID. And we were flying within two, three quarters. Most sectors of our economy were almost back to pre-COVID levels. And then, but then, unfortunately, they systematically just raised it. But they didn't stop at 10% where it was before COVID. They just kept on raising it. This had no impact whatsoever on inflation. Inflation came down because global freight charges came down and because the oil price came down. Those were the two reasons why our inflation rate came down. The Reserve Bank had nothing to do with it. What they did have something to do with, of course, was restricting economic growth because of such a high cost of capital.
Dr. Botha, I don't want to let you go. There's so much more that we can deep dive into this conversation, but perhaps realigning it to the study that has come out, the Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index. As you've highlighted, there's a lot at play that is outside of our control as South Africans, from a macroeconomic point of view, locally and globally, and even taking a look at where we are in terms of the necessary reforms from a fiscal positioning point of view. What do we need to be mindful of then as consumers whose pockets are under pressure, who are trying to take on some credit, pay it off in a disciplined manner? What do we need to be mindful of, especially as South African households and individuals who take purchasing decisions within our local environments and communities?
Well, they have to be vigilant. They have to look out for opportunities. Those that have their own businesses must look at ways to maybe establish some kind of a brand presence, collaborate with people that have different skills to theirs. Sometimes you get a person that is really excellent at fixing, for instance, a gearbox on an old car, but they don't know how to get that message across to owners of a particular brand or model of car. Mm. So collaboration is very important. The stock flow principle in South Africa works very well, which means you try to save as much as possible to get to that critical mass of maybe being able to buy a generator or go switch to solar power, which eventually can give you lots of savings. They have to be pretty smart in this country. It is just such a pity that it is expensive, very expensive, to obtain loans for working capital in this country. And that is what Altron FinTech MD Johan Jelati and I, we share that concern. It is difficult for entrepreneurs in this country to allow their venture capitalism to come to the fore because it just costs so much more than it does in Western Europe and in North America.
100%. Dr. Botha, such a pleasure speaking to you, sir. I appreciate the passion, the analysis and perspective that you've shared with us tonight. There's a lot that can be done to save our economy. Thank you again for your time this evening, sir.
Thanks. Your questions are always to the point.
Thank you so much, Dr. Botha. Really appreciate it. That's
bye-bye.
It.
Thank you.
That Dr. Rolf Botha is economist and compiler of the Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index, helping us unpack the realities of not only the pressure you and I are under as South Africans and what the reality is of just how far our rands and cents can go, but also just an understanding of the world that within which we operate in that does control and influence our rands and cents.
Kaya Biz with Gugule Tumfuphi, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Kaya 959.
Click kaya959.co.za to download the Kaya Biz podcast.